Welcome, welcome. You're listening to our podcast, Two Massage Therapists and a Microphone. My name is Mark. I'm a registered massage therapist, registered kinesiologist here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Season 7. We made seven seasons of this, or we're on 7 seasons.
7 seasons, yeah.
Unbelievable. People still listen to our garbage, eh?
Well, on that note.
Well, at least according to the wrap-up thing that they do on...
Yeah.
What's it called, man?
Spotify Wrapped.
Spotify. We had quite a growth in our audience this past year.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
I was kind of shocked. I thought people might be getting sick of what we do, but
it's really hard to get sick of because the show's not about us, right? It's about the guests. And I will say this, and I will die on this hill: we have some of the best guests because the people we get on here are your regular RMTs, and everybody has a cool story, and people do cool shit, and they don't even recognize that what they do is cool until other people are like, yo, that's cool, man. And we just have like the best guests on here. We have people who are like highly intellectual. We have people who are hilarious. We have the creative people. We've had an illusionist. We have people who have
like
dealt with
above.
Accidents and injuries and illnesses that you could never even like imagine. And I feel like it's, you can never get sick of it because it's always something different. Maybe I'm just tooting my own horn. Who knows? Anyway, hey, everyone, it's Amanda. It's season 7, and we have a repeat guest back. Her name is Mel, and she's been on a couple times with other people. So we spoke to her.
I think it was all unprofessional.
A student.
Hours,
yeah.
It?
Yeah. It started out as an unprofessional hour, speaking to her when she was waiting to do OSCE. And then we talked a little bit once she had started working. That was the episode we got a lot of shit for because I said, this room is hot as balls. Apparently, people didn't like that, so
I don't remember that.
Oh yeah,
was that when we recorded out there?
We recorded
and
in that
like
room,
all of us?
And the AC.
You guys brought
was,
your friend and
yeah.
stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
The AC was not working, and there was like I don't know 6 of us sitting in this room,
right.
And we were sweating. And I
right,
said
right,
something
right.
along the lines of, it's hot as balls in here. And like the feedback on that was like, you're disgusting. I'm like, whoops.
Okay,
all right.
Okay.
I messed up. Mel's just shaking her head.
I was going to say, I liked it because I remember when we first started, you're like, oh, we're around like a campfire because we're all connected by the wires and we couldn't move super far.
And it was hot. But anyway, Mel is back because since that time, she's done everything under the massage umbrella. Apparently, she's done lots of different things in the profession. And we thought, well, let's have her back on to kick off season 7 with an update because it's kind of fun for people who've been following you, Mel, like since being a student. And for newer therapists, I think this is kind of cool and exciting to see
yep.
like the different avenues you can take. So I actually don't know Mel's story. I'm learning it with you guys for the first time right now. So can we do a quick little recap, introduce yourself, how long you've been practicing, and we'll start getting into some of the things you've done since we talked to you last, which I think was 2 years ago.
It feels like a long time ago.
Yeah, summer 2021.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember.
Your grandmother had just been ill when you were here last time.
Yeah, so this was around the time that like we were in and out of lockdown.
Yes.
So I think at this point at the nursing home that she was at, they had just lifted the restrictions or were trying to at mm-hmm. this point because everything was still being communicated by Skype. And then also she ended up getting COVID as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a lot of unknown and it was a very stressful time just because we weren't sure if this was the thing that was
right.
going to like end her life. An update on that. So she did pass away at the beginning
oh.
of January of 2022.
So sorry.
Thank you. I'm at peace with it because I did everything I could to be there for her. And the second we got the green light to go see her, like I was there as much as possible. And it was also nice because I don't remember if I had mentioned this previously, but during the time that I was in lockdown, I was actually learning Portuguese because that's my family's first language. So when her dementia was getting very, very bad, she forgot how to speak English entirely. So it gave me motivation because everything was still by Skype and she could only hear my voice. I had no choice.
Mm-hmm.
So I took lessons twice a week and it was by a family friend. And I was learning as much as possible because when I would speak her first language, she would remember. So it kept giving me motivation. And then she would be very surprised because everyone around her just speaks English and then she's confused. So I was at peace. And then it was nice to see that I could still carry on conversations. She was calm. So I was at peace with it, knowing I did everything I could to make whatever time she had left on earth of value. And even if she couldn't remember it, I was happy to do whatever I could to be there by her side till the end.
Wow, that's really sweet. And now you speak Portuguese.
Well, the funny thing is, as a kid, I would be, they called me a parrot. I would repeat what people would say. But the thing was, I understood more than I could say. And the way that I would speak, it'd be very slang. So by the time I started to learn lessons, like do my lessons, so my homework would be like, my tutor would be like, just watch telenovelas with the subtitles on, listen to music, because you'll start to absorb things like a sponge. Now I'm at the point where it's like, I have full blown conversations. But mind you, this is like already having somewhat of a foundation, considering not everyone in my family speaks English, because right. We are an immigrant family. So I've always been like singing or speaking in Pringlish, they call it. Like if I don't know something, I'll just revert back to English or just mix it in between.
Wow. Mm. So yeah, let's do an introduction.
When you say you're at peace with it, how do you define that for you?
I say peace as I understand that she's not suffering anymore.
Yeah.
Because so... and I'm totally comfortable talking about this. So when my grandmother had passed away, so it was January 5th of 2022,
yeah.
There was a lot going on at this time because Omicron had started to become very bad, that we were going to go into another lockdown. So again, the funeral thing was, we weren't sure if we were going to do a private one with just family. We weren't sure how it would work with the church or to bury her or how long they would have to keep her in the morgue. At the same time, there was also the convoy, which a lot of people were very angry about. Mm-hmm. There were some people in my family who also, you know, took out their anger at this time. And I understand we were all full of emotions, but with people's opinions about COVID-19, the convoy, the decisions leading up to my grandmother passing away, because like my aunts were like power of attorney making the decisions. There was a lot of people trying to run things, but I also feel like a lot of anger was just simply for the fact that she's gone and you can't say a final goodbye kind of thing. So like every week I was there, and I know some of my other family members, like for whatever reason, weren't visiting as often. So I think a lot of it is just regret and remorse of like, you never really get your final goodbye. Cause my final goodbye with her was at Christmas time. Which honestly, I think that was like the best gift I could have. And it sounds messed up to say, but it was one of those, it was just like, she was calm. We had leftovers from Christmas. We were feeding her and she was still like very calm. And I got to hug her. And I remember the last thing I did with her was she was saying like, my shoulders were sore, and it didn't hit me until a while. I was like, the last thing I did was massage my grandma's shoulders and give her a big hug and say, I love you. And then we left. And then afterwards, that's when she was starting to really deteriorate. Like she was not eating, she was not taking meds, and you could tell it was her time. So at that point, it's like, there's nothing else you can do. And I also think it's very selfish to, if she's just living by a machine, I'm like, I know that's not her.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. So yeah, I'm at peace. And I also think I always look at my grandmother as someone who gave me the gift to learn, kind of thing. Because had COVID not happened, I wouldn't have been this motivated to learn a second language and be as fluent as I am now. And I also just remember the very amazing memories I had, like all the sleepovers with my cousin. She would have all 10 of us in the basement. We have all these pizza parties and movie nights. And I remember like we would go to the park and all these things. So even though like, yeah, dementia like took those memories away, it's like I will always have those good things. And I also can say, as where I am in my life, I've also dealt with more deaths than probably some of my other family members, because some of them are experiencing their first close death now in their 30s and 40s. Mm-hmm. The first person in my family who passed away that was very close to me was my grandmother on my dad's side. And that was at 13. So I think there's also just a lot of people too who grieve differently. And I understand the fact like death is a part of living. At the end of the day, it's like, just tell people you love them, give them hugs, and just appreciate whatever time you can. I think it's really a mindfulness thing too.
Mm-hmm. Whose decision was it to not be on machines? And we don't have to talk about any of this. I'm just curious because now I'm replaying my dad's scenario.
So I think at that point, because like my family's quite large, my mom's side of the family, she's one of seven children. So my six girls, one boy. So my six aunts, including my mother, were really the ones making the decisions.
Yeah.
So they collectively agreed. And even the doctors were saying, like, at this point, it's like really the only way that she will be alive is if we keep her mm-hmm. on a machine. So really they just gave, you know, things just to keep her calm and peaceful.
Yeah.
I guess like some of my cousins were not on board with that, but I think it was the idea of them possibly getting the impression they thought we're quitting. It's like, no, like we've done everything we mm-hmm. could.
Mm-hmm.
Like even before, cause she's been in a nurse. She was in a nursing home since, 2016. And we collectively agreed that would be the best decision because it was getting to a point when her dementia was starting. She was wandering, leaving the stove on. There was at one point, I think a neighbor had called, like, your grandma's down the street kind of thing. And even between a big family, it's like at one point we were taking turns sleeping over kind of thing to make sure she's not wandering. And we always had someone every day. So it's like, we didn't give up. It's also understanding that like, this is when that's all there's left.
Yep.
Yeah.
I get it all too well. I get it.
Mm-hmm. Especially because like, and I'm so sorry for your loss as well, because you lost your father as well. So yeah. It's one of those things that like, it is a touchy subject for some people. But it's one of those things. It's like, until like it actually happens, it gives you a different perspective.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sorry to be a downer.
No, it's okay.
No, I mean, this is part of the update. And I'm grateful that you would be that open about it because like you said, it can be a really touchy subject, but a lot of people will relate to a lot of things you say. And, you know, we've talked about it on a few different episodes. We've had a death doula on, and we've talked about, you know, Mark's experience with losing his father off and on throughout the year.
I'm at total peace with it. I only have one regret. When my dad he wasn't mobile for the longest time. They even installed, he had a lift installed so he can go up and down the stairs and stuff. The last couple weeks, he kept asking me, can you take me to the basement? I haven't seen the basement for years. Can you take me to the basement? I'm like,
well, but he wasn't saying it that way. He was saying he wanted to go see his tools.
Well, there's more to it. But he's like, first he was just like, I haven't seen the basement for years. I'm like, I'm not taking you down to the basement because the likelihood of us getting back upstairs really easily is not going to happen. And the basement is just the way you remember it being. And then it turned into, like, there's some tools I want to go look at. And I'm like, yeah, why do you want to go look at tools? I'll go bring them up for you. How about that? So that's the only regret that I ever had was I didn't call over my buddy Ron and we didn't pick up my dad and just take him down to the basement for him to realize there ain't nothing down here for me to see.
Yeah, Mark kept saying, what's he going to do with the tools? Because by that point, his rheumatoid arthritis was so bad. Like, he wasn't going to be using those tools.
He had so much atrophy in his lower extremities. Like, yeah. He was not mobile, but that's the only thing. I was like, that's the only thing. I was like, maybe I should have just slid him down the stairs.
We could have built a slide.
Maybe he's got like a winning lottery ticket down there, and he's like, I really want to use this. I want to give this to you.
It's interesting that you say that. I don't know if you know this, but no. Shortly after your father passed away, there was, I don't know if you guys remember this, there was a winning lottery ticket in Ontario that had been unclaimed, yeah. And there was only like so many days to claim it. Your mother actually searched through all of your dad's belongings just in case. I was over there I was helping her go through the stuff because she thought maybe he used to buy lottery tickets. Maybe there's a winning lotto ticket in this house.
Oh, boy.
But no, we didn't find it. So
it is what it is.
It is. Well, let's reintroduce Mel. I know we tried to, but this was part of the introduction. Because the last time she was here, you know, we were in this really bizarre time where like you couldn't even go see your poor grandmother. But I mean, I'm really glad you got that time with her afterwards.
It was weird. I mean, even at the hospital, we're all there and my father is in his bed. And I'm like, I had to tell my brother, I'm like, take your fucking mask off. take off your mask. Like, he ain't walking out of here today. He ain't walking out of here ever. Take off your mask. I'm going to see your fucking face.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Anyway, whatever.
Weird, weird times.
Yeah. 2021 was just a blur. Like, I have my Kohl's notes of like the pandemic. And then 2021 was basically summed up by like insurrection, United States, half the dollar store open with the COVID vaccine and the passport. We got obsessed with Squid Game. And then it was 2022. Like, that's my Kohl's notes of 2021.
I don't think I remember any of 2021, to be honest with you. It's all a blur. Yeah. Anyway, let's try this again. Mel?
Yeah, sorry.
For those who haven't heard your first couple of episodes, give us the Kohl's notes on that, how you got into massage. We know it was your first career because, I mean, she's still just a young baby. But how you got into the profession and what you've been doing for the last few years.
So hi, everyone. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Mel. I've been a massage therapist now. Oh my God, let me do math. It will be 4 years officially in February. Wow. That I've been a massage therapist. Nice. I work in a multidisciplinary clinic. And how I got into massage therapy was honestly an accident. Basically, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do after grade 12. I did a victory lap. I had some ideas like athletic therapy, possibly kinesiology. I did get waitlisted. And then what ended up happening, a friend of mine at the time got accepted into the program. Mm. And she said, you know what? I think this would be right up your alley. And then I was even told by like guidance counselors, even like at college fairs and stuff like that. I was like, you know, you should check out massage therapy. And I'm like, okay, I don't know what this is. I've never even had a massage, but let's try. I went to the open house at a nearby community college in my city. I met some of the students and teachers, and then I just never looked back since.
Nice.
It's really interesting to me because I know I probably said this when Mel came in the first time with her friends from school. Like, in high school, this was never even a thought. Like, I didn't even think of massage as a possible career option. And I also fell into it by accident. But what I love is the fact that it was sort of accidental, but not really. You obviously had interest in the body in some way. The fact that you thought of athletic therapy or kinesiology, like, this was in your realm of interest. Mm-hmm. But I love that 4 years later, not only do you still love it, but you're still like going in new directions. And that's really what we wanted to talk about today, because it's not what people automatically think it is. It's not that you go to school, you get a job, and you know, you just rub backs all day. It can be, though, if that's what you want it to be. What is it, what has it been for you? Tell us about your career trajectory since graduating.
Oh my God. Okay. I wish I had like notes, because now it's like I'm gonna have all these brain farts and I'm probably gonna miss stuff. But even within like my first 2 years of practice, it was really a matter of I just want to like try things, see what clicks, what doesn't. And one thing I wanted to try to clear out of my head, because I was kind of getting this feeling from a lot of peers, was like, oh, you have to niche. And it's like, well, you know what? For me, it feels like eating your favorite food every single day and getting sick of it. And I did try it. And immediately I was like, not really my thing. And I also didn't want to become like some RMTs I have seen on social media, where they become so narrow-minded with a niche that everything else, like, they just don't consider. And it's like, this is the only thing I do. This is XYZ. This is the literature, research, blah, 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 blah. And they just completely are not open to listening to anybody else's opinions or thoughts.
Right. I want to pause you right there and talk about the whole niche thing, because I very often promote and I back the idea of having a niche, but I really love what Mel is saying here, because I see that all too often as well. When you get so like down a rabbit hole of one thing, I mean, the algorithm works, man. You guys know this. You're only going to see things that support your own beliefs. And this is why mindset is so important in anything, but that's a whole other conversation. But I love the fact that you recognize right away, like, this isn't really for me. And there are, just like anything, there's like extremes of sides. And when it comes to niching, there are people who think of a niche as having to be so extreme, like, I'm only going to treat this population. Whereas a niche can be something as simple as your style of treatment, your personality, your vibe as a therapist. Like, there's different classifications, I think, and different ways you can look at a niche. But I like the fact that you recognize, like, I don't know about this.
I don't think it's a necessity at all.
It's not.
I think it's a necessity for people that don't like the idea of doing things that they don't want to do. I think it's a necessity for people to survive if they don't like the variety or the potential variety. And then that's the way for them to zone in and be, quote unquote, an expert in this one thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's important for someone who's of that mindset. So, you know, if you don't want to be the general practice medical doctor, then being a specialist is up your alley.
Yeah.
But if you enjoy being that general practice medical doctor, you enjoy being that massage therapist that is really open and happy to see a variety of people in a variety of conditions in a variety of settings, then it's not a necessity at all.
No, it's not a necessity. And through your own branding, and you know, if you are still being authentic and being you, you're still going to attract your people. Like, you're still going to be a person that can create a practice that you're happy with, even if it's not like, oh, I only treat athletes.
What was the niche that you dabbled with?
I tried a few, to be honest, and I think a lot of it kind of was thrusted upon me because we had an RMT at my clinic who was on mat leave. So when I got her clients, I kind of felt like an expectation to be like her.
Mm.
So like, oh, you're replacing so-and-so. Well, they used to do this and this and this. And I was like, to be honest, I've never met them because at this point I was still like fresh into the career. I hadn't met this person because they went on maternity leave before I started at my clinic. So I was like, and I just kind of said them flat out, like, if you don't like me, you don't have to book with me. If you really like this person, you can wait till she comes back, or I could try to refer you out. But like, I'll do my best, and that's all I can really do. Like, and I felt like, especially with her demographic, because I got a lot of chronic pain people,
mm-hmm.
As well as I got a lot of pregnancy coming my way. And I was like, okay, I learned some things, but then I also realized really early on, chronic pain, it's emotionally draining, because mm-hmm. there's a lot of people who are like, oh, just 5 more minutes. And I was like, I have shit to do. I have to still do my notes, try to eat something clean. And it's just like, I would be not physically exhausted. Like, I feel like I'd still massage for days on end. Like, nothing bothers me, but it's like emotionally, I've checked out a little bit. And then with pregnancy, like, I didn't mind that one, but it was one of them. I was like, it kind of, again, it becomes repetitive. It's a little bit of a Groundhog Day situation. I was like, okay, let me look at other things as well. So when that RMT came back, especially because you did have also a niche market, which you've had a few people on your podcast talking about manual lymph drainage. She also did that with pregnancy. So it was a very specific niche. So that's when I was feeling that projection a little bit. Can you still carry on what she did? And I was like, she is so specific that I'm like, I'm not going to even try. I could refer you up, but again, like, I understand where I understood really early on, I'm not going to bend over and backwards for clients. And then it was just a matter of taking courses. So like, I took your TMJ course and I was like, oh, this is fun. Cause like, nobody wants to go inside people's mouths. And funny enough, when I was in high school, there was that one point I was like, let's try to be a dentist. Did take your kid to work. I'm like, this job is disgusting. And I'm like, never mind. So full circle. For me, it was just seeing a crown get replaced and it smells like death. And I was like, I can't. Whoa. No, I'm done.
I don't think I could be a dentist either. Like, when people tell me that like my job is gross because I touch people all day, I'm like, yeah, I guess to some people that would be gross. You know, like, I touch people's feet. I do a lot of TMJ work as well. So yeah, I'm going inside people's mouths. But none of that grosses me out. But yeah, being a dentist, like, you, when you've seen some rotting teeth, I don't think I could do that all the time.
I think at some point you just see dollar signs.
Yeah, maybe.
And that's what gets you through all of it, is like, oh,
100%.
I'm going to get a nice TV out of this one. Oh, that vacation's going to be so much easier now. You know, one of those things. When you were taking over for that mat leave, was it the clinic that was kind of pushing you into being the mirror replacement, or was that just something that you took on all by yourself?
I think I just kind of took on by myself, because when I did get hired, it was more to replace the hours that she was working.
Right.
So it kind of just naturally became that way. I can say I'm very blessed that the clinic I work at is fantastic. My boss treats everybody like gold. We're honestly like a little family. And I had mentioned before, there's 4 alumni from my class that we all work in the same place. We just are completely chaotic together. But at that time, because there was a lot of people coming and going, because at one point there was a chunk of RMTs at my clinic who were moms and had kids between the ages of like 1 to 5 years old. So there was a lot of coming and going based on availability, kids' activities, daycare. So it was changing a lot while I was progressing in my career.
So you dabbled in the niches, not for you. And then let's pick right back up. Where did you go from there? What things have you gotten the chance to experience in such a short time, 4 years?
Volunteering for the CMTO. So they did have the MCQ question bank. So I was like, you know what? This is fun. Let's try that. Slap that on a resume. And then one of my professors asked me to be a body for the Canadian Massage Conference. And this was back in 2021,
right.
Where you guys were still doing it out of Burlington, but you were recording it.
Yeah, that was when we did the live stream.
Yeah.
That was in the blur of 2021.
Yeah. So I did that. And I was like, oh, this is a fun experience. Why not? And then I started to network with other people. And then another one, this is a big one. I ended up working for a Canadian Premier League soccer team, again, by accident, just by saying yes to something. So this was, a right place, right time. And from what I've gathered about the sports niche or aspect of massage therapy, it's kind of like, it's not what you know, it's who you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what ended up happening, I think in 2021, there was a lot of programs that were still trying to get students to get hours for outreach and things like that. So again, a prof messaged me because we all have each other's social media and personal contact information. We're still quite close. One of them said, hey, you're in the city where this team is. Someone called in sick. We need someone for this thing called stretcher crew. Stretcher crew is, if you've ever watched soccer, it's when someone goes down, you see the people with the stretcher and the first aid kit. You just run, pick them up, take them to Emerge or wherever.
Right.
So they said, you're not doing first aid. You're literally on standby just to pick them up and take them to medical. You basically get a free ticket because you're sitting sideline just next to the bench. And just if shit hits the fan, they need you. So it's like, do you want to do it? And this was in the span of an hour. So I had to make a quick decision because I just finished work. For me, I had to go downtown. And at the time, I didn't have a car yet, which another thing, I bought my first adult thing, which is a car.
Yay!
Actually, I have a model of it because my dad, when I first bought my car, he's like, you need a little model. So I was like, this is what it looks like.
Oh, nice. Aww. Right on.
Is it that same color? Is it blue?
Yeah. Is it? Yeah. And I named it Sonic. I love the hedgehog. That. It's a Honda Accord Turbo Sport, by the way, for people who can't see. It's a 2018.
Nice,
so
nice.
At that time, I was still taking public transit. So quickly during this experience, because like the game was going to start at like 7 o'clock. They said, be there by 6. I had just finished at 5 o'clock. So I texted my mom. I was like, mom, I need someone just to drop me off. And I have no problem saying what the team is. It's a Forge FC Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
So how it works with sports is that the Canadian Premier League is, I guess, like a league under Major League Soccer, not necessarily a farm team, but kind of almost like a domestic league in Canada to just kind of promote soccer and kind of have development programs or somewhere for Canadian athletes to go.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it's still elite soccer, but not like TFC.
Right.
So not there yet, but the potential to be there.
Yep.
So I asked my mom, I was like, hey, can you just drive me downtown? So we just booked it. And then we were at like Tim Hortons Field, which for those of you who don't really know, has no parking. So it was a matter of just literally drop me off at the closest exit.
Tuck and roll, Mel. Tuck and roll.
Yeah. I was like a chicken with my head cut off going around the whole stadium. I was like, I don't know where to go. They didn't tell me shit. So at one point I asked the security guard, I was like, do you know where stretcher crew's supposed to be? So they send me to this green room, which turned out I was with a bunch of other students from my program, obviously, like they're younger than me or like currently in the program. So they also got asked as well. And then we just sat sideline. Nothing happened to that game, thank God. Also, there's a lot of faking in soccer. So sometimes you can't really tell if they're actually just crying for a penalty or they're actually injured. So it's a lot of fiddle and you get up and it's like, oh, they're fine. And then that same night, I had the athletic therapist from Forge FC somehow got my number. I don't know how this happened. Text me and said, hey, playoffs are coming. We need a massage therapist. Would you like to come in these days to treat? We'll negotiate pay and stuff like that. Because apparently somehow they found out I was already registered. And I was like, what? I was just... it felt like a fever dream, to be honest. So then 2 weeks then go by, I show up, and then I'm suddenly treating these athletes. And they said, yeah, you could be on standby just in case if we need more RMTs to treat now that we're in playoffs.
Wow. And see, like you said, all just from saying
you
yes.
You say yes all I the just said yes. Time.
Yeah.
Always say
and,
yes.
And then even from that, I ended up doing stretcher crew again going into 2022. And then at that point, like, I didn't have to pick anybody up. There was actually one game I was supposed to do, but I was going with a friend of mine because she had tickets. So I was actually an attendee in the stands. And that was like the one game, I guess a player had torn their ACL or something. And I was like, are you serious? And I don't know why I was so excited to see, like, oh my God, this is what actually happens. And I'm just watching from the stands.
You know what though? It's always a good day when your sideline medical, when it's a boring day at work.
Yeah.
That's always a good day, right? Mm-hmm. Oh man, this is so cool. I love it that you say yes. That's perfect. If they had approached you and they said they need an RMT, but they didn't talk about money or pay, and they didn't expect to have to pay, would you still have said yes to doing the RMT work?
Oh, 100%. Because even that, another thing I could slap on my resume, because it's just like, why not? And at that time, I was still so green. And I just learned from that athletic therapist, because she was also an RMT. So she had a bunch of things under her belt, which then led me to doing your cupping course, because she said, like, you're treating 3-4 guys at one time. So the way they set up the treatment room, and specifically for this AT, because it was just her at the time. Also, depending on, because Canada's funny this way, Canada usually subcontracts apparently for a lot of their leagues. So you're not guaranteed the next season.
Right.
You're guaranteed maybe certain times or based on a contract or budgeting. And even then, sometimes you don't get paid till way later. So like, even for this, I was doing this in like the fall, and then even like later winter, I didn't get paid till April of 2022. So that was like almost like 5 months. I was like, hey, did you guys forget about me? Where's my check? Like, hey, do you need me again? Like, I'm here. But it's a lot of the waiting game kind of thing. So at the time that I worked with the team for playoffs, they had like 5 or 6 treatment tables. The athletic therapist on one person was doing taping, the other had acupuncture, the other was cupping. And then the other, she'd be doing general speech. She just ran around and she looked so calm and collected, just treating 4 people and pumping them out like it was nothing. So she said, if you have cupping under your belt, especially plastic cupping, you can pump them out as fast as I can, even if you don't have acupuncture or whatever. And I was like, that actually seems so efficient. I had done instrument assisted, like, or ISTM before, and I was able to still do some stuff, but I didn't have an in-depth understanding of cupping. So then I did your course, mm-hmm. and then I really enjoyed it. When I brought it back to my clinic, I accidentally created a niche, didn't mean to, but then I became known as the cupping person. But then I would be able to do treatments where I can get so much done because I could plop them on one body part, do something else. Yeah. And then like, I still have time and I don't feel like I'm rushing. So I learned in that experience, time management and efficiency, especially considering you're only with the athletes 30 minutes. Everything is on like a whiteboard saying, oh, this athlete has this injury, work on this body part. And then this is the time limit. And then you just keep pumping them out like an assembly line. So that experience taught me really how to be super efficient. Even though I'm not a sports massage therapist, I don't have that title, I didn't do that certification or be a part of that association.
Yep.
But it was just, I just learned on the job. And I was like, okay. So like, I do have a good skill set. Now it's just a matter of just networking with people and kind of learning as you go.
I do love that. And yeah, like Mark said, it's really awesome that you do say yes to these things. And I'm listening to your story and I'm pulling out so many things that I always feel and like think to myself about like what I do in my life. Like people define success differently, right? And I know for a lot of people, you know, financial success does matter. And I'm not saying money doesn't matter, because that would be a crazy thing to say. I like money. I want money. Who doesn't want money? Mm-hmm. But there are other things that I get from the things we do. You know, you talked about just even these learning experiences, you know, like getting a chance to learn on the job and just get thrown into working with athletes. You may not have ever actually learned as much as you did without, like, sometimes just getting thrown in there. You know, like when you were learning Portuguese and you were told, watch television, listen to the radio, like just doing things sometimes really gives you a very genuine experience. I think that is super valuable. The networking opportunities are super valuable. I often have people say about Mark and myself with all the different projects we do. And, you know, we've done things where we get invited to like speak at schools, or we'll get invited to speak at different events. And, you know, not every opportunity we get, actually a lot of them are not paid opportunities, but yep. somebody will say, hey, do you guys want to do this? And we say yes so very often if we can see the value in it. And the value isn't always money. And the value sometimes is just getting to meet people we haven't met before, network with an association we haven't met before, go to a place we haven't gone before. And even just doing this podcast and having our voices out in the massage community has afforded us so many cool experiences and opportunities, and that has benefited us actually even financially in just so many different ways, where I'm like, I love all these things I'm hearing from you. Because I'm like, yeah, that's exactly how I would describe
really
my career.
It's really short-sighted in my mind to turn down opportunities just because it doesn't come with a pay at the end of it.
Yeah.
I read this post on Facebook when I was talking about you should never work for free and you should always expect to get paid. And I saw so many people chime in and I was like, I don't buy half of this stuff, right? Like, oh, if you do stuff for free, that someone doesn't value you and blah, blah. I'm like, really? Like, I don't know. Or when they promise you exposure, it never works out like that. I'm like, really? I don't know. I feel like that you gotta evaluate it a little bit more than just, am I getting paid or not? Do you know what I mean?
Well,
there's
also
so much that
people expect
something.
Reward so quickly. Like, again, when Mel
it's
was saying
farming,
that
man.
She had to wait 5 months. Now, this is, you know, that's an extreme example of waiting 5 months to get paid money. But I mean, when it comes to what Mark was just saying about exposure, we have lots of people who will be really excited to do a project with us and work with us in some way because they see that we've had success without actually recognizing, like we just said at the beginning of this episode, we're going into season 7. Okay. We've been at this for, you know, all going on 7 years. So we've been doing this a long time, and there was a lot of talking to nobody, making video content for nobody, posting on social media for nobody. You know, we're doing what we do in the way that we like to do it. And, you know, eventually getting these opportunities and meeting our people and, you know, gaining this community and this tribe that we have. But nothing is instant. So when there's people who sign on to do a project with us and work with us, what I notice is there's very few who actually continue to put in the effort if they don't see an instant reward. Like somebody will say, like, how do I get involved with this that you guys are doing? And I give them like, these are the different ways you can get involved. They might, you know, write a blog piece for us and say, yeah, like I want to get my name out there, post this. They write us one blog piece that might get a little bit of traction, but again, it's their first one. But if they don't see an instant, like something has come from this, you know, nobody's contacted me, I've gotten no job opportunities from this, nothing is, then that's it. They're gone. And I'm like, well, it doesn't really work that way. Like you have to continue to put yourself out there. And sometimes the reward doesn't come in, you know, something as obvious as here's a check
for
something.
Well, that's the thing. And it's not that whoever is contacting you is using you for your skill. Do you know what I mean? I saw a lot of that. I'm like, well, it's not really the way it goes. I mean, you can be super, super skilled. And if you don't have the opportunity to use those skills in any kind of meaningful way, who the fuck cares that you're super skilled?
Yeah.
Right? If you're given the opportunity to use your skills in a meaningful way and then be exposed to other people and have the opportunity to network and blah, blah, blah. That's where the magic happens. It's like when you're a band and you're an opening band for a big name act. You get paid shit if you get paid at all. But you also get to sit in front of the band's audience that is not your audience because you don't have an audience.
Yeah.
And now you have the potential of gathering some of this band's audience.
And even
and you
if
don't
you,
say
and
no
even
to
if
stuff
you
like
don't,
that.
And even if you don't right away, though, you can still, when you are
you
80
resume.
Years old, like, yeah, like Mel was saying, it's something to add to your right. But when you're 80 years old, you can tell your grandkids, I opened for them.
But it's not, just seize every opportunity possible. And I don't,
totally.
I don't think young people do that. I think young people are actually being kind of steered away from that type
of
thing.
That young people does that.
Well, that's why this young person will fucking be a savage. Because for every one of you, there's a fucking 1,000 other kids that don't want to do anything. and then feel that they're being devalued and all I'm doing is making the rich person richer and blah, 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 blah.
Oh, yeah, Mark
without,
hates that.
Without the vision of where this can possibly take me and who could I possibly meet? Because it's exactly like you said, the whole sport therapy world, you can be the most skilled therapist in the world and if no one knows you, you ain't going anywhere. That's all there is to it. So you got to be skilled and then you have to have the ability to catch the eye of someone that's going to be able to make decisions.
I'm also just so shocked, and you know, I'll let Mel speak on this because I don't know if this is her experience, but this is kind of what I was hearing from what you were saying, and maybe I'm just like way too sappy and sentimental, but like I think majority of humans, like just fundamentally, what do humans want in life? Like what do most people want? It's some kind of connection. Like you don't want to be isolated. And sometimes I think, again, the reward comes from like, I get to meet all these cool people and do stuff that like, I don't have to look at everything I do as like, okay, what did I get out of that? What I got out of it was I got to meet some really cool people and connect with people that I maybe never would have gotten to before. And I don't see how that's not valuable to like a species that really just craves connection because we can be really, really isolated.
It's like one of our cats that hang out with us from the Canadian Massage Conference. Before a lot of these big dudes made it really big in continuing education, he's like, you don't understand, man. I helped those guys so much. You know how many thousands of times those guys, their names were in print because of us? You know how many thousands of times they got eyes laid on them because of us, right? And all of that stuff, you know, you just make sure you understand that there's value in giving up your time and giving up your skill. There's always the potential massive value that's going to come back to you in the end. But anyway, I'm a broken record at this point.
Well, I don't know, Mel, what do you think? Like, she does know. Like, was I completely off when I'm saying, like, are some of these experiences to you just like, it's an exciting, cool thing you get to do and like meet some cool people?
Yeah, like some of them, especially for me, because anyone who knows me in real life, especially with the soccer experience, I'm a soccer fanatic. I've been playing soccer since I was 3 years old. I was able to compete regionally for my city when I was in high school. I love the sport. So even if I was like, you know what, I don't give a shit if I wasn't getting paid a decent amount of money, which, you know what, the money was nice. Not going to lie, it was a nice check. But I was like, I'm doing something like little Mel would have been doing backflips. It's like, I'm sidelined at a professional soccer game. It's totally. Like, this is like my inner child. I was just so happy to be there. And even though like it is a smaller league, a lot of the names aren't as well known, but I was just excited. Like the atmosphere was great. I loved feeling a part of the team, even if it was just a small piece. So I was just happy to do something for myself. And that's also a thing I've noticed as I've gotten older. It's like, I want to do things not for the sake of other people or whatever. I want to do things that actually make me happy. Nice. So I can actually look back and be like, I did that. That's like a core memory. And I'm totally at a point in my life as well where I also don't want to be that person that years from now I'm going to live with regret. Like, oh, I should have done this. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, you know what? Fuck it. Why not? Yeah. Like, throw something at the wall, see if it sticks.
I like that.
I dig it.
With some of the other experiences too, because like, this is also the way I kind of view things. And there's also some things I've realized as well as I got older. It's like, okay, give yourself some credit. Everything I know about massage therapy, someone has told me about this or taught me. You had, you know, the founders of Sutherland Chan on your podcast. It's like, and I remember there was a specific quote that I forgot if it was like Grace or someone else. I'm drawing a blank right now. It's like, promise me when you leave this place, whatever you learn, teach it to somebody else.
That was Christine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
she's big on that.
That's one thing. Yeah. I mean, you look at somebody like Christine Sutherland, who's had success in our profession, and she still really promotes, like, okay, so just as an example, anytime I'm with her, if she notices anything in me, like I've got a picture of her massaging my neck because she's like, I can help you. And if she can help someone, she's going to help someone. And she's not expecting me to pay her for her time. I mean, I would pay her for her time if she wanted it. But I mean, she just really promotes like, yeah, teaching other people and, you know, using what you have to better everybody around you. And I think that's really cool. You know, not everything she does is about money. She actually came to the Canadian Massage Conference this year. voluntarily said, like, I will pay for my flights. I will pay for my hotel. I mean, we're of course like, no, you're not going to do that. But she's like, I just want to be there and I want to get in front of your audience and I want to talk to people. And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. And it's just amazing. Even when I heard about Sutherland Chin, their attitude towards the profession, it's not a matter of like, oh, let me hold all these secrets and just show me the money to actually tell you. It's like, the only way this profession is going to grow is if we're actually collaborative. And I do find, like, I don't go on social media as much as I used to, because I found there was so many people who'd be on like a soapbox where they would almost want to shut other therapists down, like, mm-hmm. especially people who are very, and I'm sorry to say this, I hope I don't get canceled, the evidence-based people drive me up the wall on Instagram and stuff like that, because like, where's the evidence? Where's the research to prove this? And they just troll everybody. So it's like, there's people who do have very good things to say or different perspectives. And immediately I notice they get shut down. I'm like, you know what? Like, this is just from me being not many years out. It's like, the whole point that we all got into this was to help people. I don't understand why you're bringing each other down. Like, this is why this is like ass backwards. Why do you think that like you're the person that has all the answers? And then you're also probably the person who does nothing else when it comes to like, you know, RMTAO. We have all these surveys and stuff absolutely. Like that. And you're probably not participating. So it's just like the people who just love to bitch and complain about everything. As sad totally as it is to say.
Preach, my friend. Preach.
Period.
Totally agree. And if you're that type of person, then I got a great idea. Educate us all. Don't hide behind the wall of your course. Why don't you just educate us all? If we all should be learning and you have the answers, then do it. Oh. But what do I know?
I mean, if people want to sell a course, fine.
I have no problem with that.
My bigger concern, with what Mel was saying, when people get shut down right away, what I've noticed with those kind of people who are standing on their soapbox is they are very quick to shut people down and essentially call people stupid, but they don't educate. It's like they're just pointing out, like, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong. I'm like, well, then show me how I'm wrong, mm-hmm. or show me how to be more right, or, well, you just have to do your own research. I'm like, well, then.
It's like, what do I know?
All right.
I'm slowly stealing Mark's idioms. I've actually noticed I'm slowly turning into a Mark, because I started to say, oh, that's not my circus, not my monkeys. My parents looked up at me like, where did you hear that? And I was like, yeah, I just picked it up from like Mark and Amanda. They just know you as the podcast people because I play you constantly in my house.
I could never come to your house. Your parents know too much.
But it's funny because they're like, I haven't heard that since I was a kid. And like, also to keep in mind, my parents are like the last generation of boomers as well. They're both 1964. So I like to joke, how does it feel to be as old as Tim Hortons?
My parents are probably close in age to your parents. And I had always heard Not My Circus, Not My Monkeys, like always. And I can't remember who it was that said it. The first time Mark heard it, it was like gold.
Dory.
Yes. And I was like, you've never heard that before? Because that was like a regular saying when I was younger. So I was like, what? You've never heard that? And then once he heard that, that's it. He adopted it. And that's his answer to almost everything. That, and as you said, I don't know. What do I know?
What do I know?
Yeah, what do I know? Not My Circus, Not My Monkeys. Look at this Yahoo. And I was just like, oh my God, I'm turning into Mark.
That's what the world
Poor
needs,
you.
More Marks.
Unbelievable. So what else you got going on? This sounds fucking foul. You don't understand. I'm smiling outside and I'm smiling inside.
I also did, just for fun, again, because I was like, fuck it, why not? The RMTAO, this was like within my first year of practice, shot out an email if anyone wants to contribute to the website. If you have an interesting article or the magazine, go ahead. So I had put out an article, what I learned my first year of practice.
Nice.
And I do this thing for myself, and this is more of a kind of just like a checkpoint for me. And when I'm at the end of the year, it's like, okay, what are some things that I've learned? What are some things that I realized about myself I can work on just to always have growth?
Mm-hmm.
And I do this even little thing on Instagram as well. It's like, things I learned in my practice year one, year two, kind of thing. And these are just my opinions. And like, sorry, Nikki, I'm not taking your ideas away, I promise. but I would just do these little check-ins. So I was like, you know what? Let me just put this out and see like, you know, just for a fun experience. So it didn't end up in the magazine just because I think the focus for that issue was mental health. Mm. So it ended up being on the website. And the funny thing is, like, I know not as many people look at it. And I was like, I didn't care. But even some of my coworkers or like friends from school and stuff. So I was like, oh my God, you did that. Like, how did you do this? Like, I just said, yes.
Yep.
I love that.
Yeah, I did that. I also, I wouldn't say this is also a niche, but I also wanted to kind of create a, actually, I should probably go back a little bit. So I remember seeing like a CMTO, like, question. I think it was a survey, whether it was Strive or something. It was like, how can you make your practice a safe practice? And what do you do? And I feel like when people talk about having a trauma-informed practice, it was almost as if like it was something I couldn't really understand. Like, how do you actually do it? Because there's like a border between like, you're a therapist, but you're not that kind of therapist. So how can I be there for clients, especially in the climate we were in where mental health issues are going through the roof because the pandemic and other things going on in the world? And it, like, people talk about it on your table. It's like, how can I make them feel supported? And even at that time, going through what I was going through in my life, it was also how to take care of myself. So I did psychological first aid with Red Cross.
Nice.
To understand what does it mean to have a trauma-informed practice. Now, when you do the course, it's more like you do self-care as a first aid rescuer, but then also a self-check-in, when to refer out, how to create resources for people. So that way, if that comes up, I know what to do and not just kind of be pushed in a corner like, I don't know what to do. So I did that. And I also did another course with Dexterity. I think they partner with Massage Act to also learn more about it from a massage perspective.
Yeah, you've been doing lots of stuff. So what's next? What's your plan? Where are we going with this career of yours?
To be honest, I don't know. It's just more try things. Everything's fun. My big focus right now is a powerlifting competition, actually.
Like, you're going to be powerlifting or you're going to be a massage therapist for powerlifters?
Oh no, I'm powerlifting.
Wow.
Yeah. So how this happened. So again, another thing happened by accident. Like, you know, make this a drinking game. Drink every time I see something happen to me by accident.
Mark doesn't drink, so he'd be hammered already.
I'd be drunk.
True. So after massage school, so by the time I finished everything, this was like end of 2019. And I realized, I was like, I'm burnt out. Like, I could acknowledge I was physically burnt out. Like, when I looked at photos of myself, my eyes looked sunken in. I had actually lost weight due to the stress and intensity of the program. And even at that point, just emotionally, mentally exhausted, just because you devote so much time to this program, do the licensing exam, and then you're just like a sack of worms at the end of it. Everything just feels like numbing. Mm-hmm. And I remember after doing my MCQ and like just brain dumping everything into that exam, I remember telling myself, I refuse to be like the doctor that smokes, because like, there's so many RMTs you hear about, like, you know, my hands hurt, I burnt out after so many years or whatever. It's like, I need to take care of myself, because if I'm going to be taking care of people as a job, there's no way that I can avoid not feeling that impact somewhat on my body, whether it's physically, emotionally, or mentally. So I ended up investing in myself. I got myself a personal trainer. And at that time, I was about like 114, 115 pounds, like wet. Like, it was, I had lost almost 15 pounds just due to stress. Mm. And like, I can even tell when I look back at old pictures of myself, I was like, oh my gosh, like, I didn't realize I looked that way. So I ended up getting a personal trainer, you know, I bulked, as they say. And then COVID happened, in and out of lockdown, tried to maintain as best I could. So what ended up happening, my lifts were getting very good to a point that my trainer was like, did you ever think of powerlifting? And I said, to be honest, I don't know much about it, but can you explain it to me? So he was explaining, like, you know, how it's your squat, bench, your deadlift, and, you know, how you do your compound lifts. And then I kept progressing. And then at one point he was like, did you ever think about doing a competition? And I said, well, to be honest, I don't know how a competition works. Like, if I need a certain amount of weight to pull to qualify. And he said, you know what? Sometimes local gyms hold them. You can just do it for the sake that you did it. Mm. And luckily enough, now my trainer, I have a new one now, because my other one, just due to scheduling, we just couldn't continue on training. He's running through Good Life Fitness, which is my gym, just a recreational powerlifting competition where the trainers just show off their clients saying, hey, this is what you can lift and just have fun with it. So I'm training for this now. Either April or May is the date in 2024. And yeah, it's fun. Like I don't care if I place podium. I don't care if I'm last. It's like, I never imagined doing that. So why not? It just started with me taking care of myself. And it's like, okay, I need an objective. I can't just pick up heavy circles and put them down repetitively. I need like a goal somehow.
I've never heard anybody describe weightlifting like that, but now I will never describe it any other way. Heading to the gym to pick up heavy circles.
Yeah. That's how a lot of people say it's like, if I don't pick up these goddamn circles, my mental health is in the garbage.
Oh my goodness. But see, another thing you just said yes to, and it's cool because not only is this helping you to stay focused and keep yourself in shape, so you're not the doctor who smokes. And I love that you use that analogy because I say that all the time. And it's also, you know, possibly going to open doors for you. You're going to meet people that could be potential clients because now you understand lifters and you understand powerlifting. And maybe eventually you're going to start treating a bunch of people who are, you know, doing recreational powerlifting competitions at Good Life.
Possibly. I'm already starting to get them because even, again, another connection. Because my trainer already knew that I was an RMT. And then all of a sudden, you just say massage therapist. Everyone's ears just perk. And yeah. They're like, massage?
Everybody,
my back hurts?
Everybody loves
you. It?
I know. Everywhere I go, I like almost don't want to say it out loud. When someone's like, what do you do? I'm like, I'm a massage therapist. If you say that too loud, you are the most popular person in the room instantly.
So my trainer started referring me to other people. And funny enough, at one point, so I have, I guess they call them clips at Good Life. Like how many sessions you have with a trainer. So I remember at one point I had finished programming. He's like, you know what? You're good at this point to kind of handle some things on your own. However, I like the bargaining system. And I was like, yes, I'm listening. I will train you for an hour if I get a massage for an hour. And it's funny because the trainer that I had, he had chronic neck issues because before he was a trainer, he used to do martial arts. So he's concussed to the point of no return. So I was helping him with his migraines and I kind of used him as a guinea pig even after cupping, like doing the cupping course with you guys. Like, hey, do you want to try this? Like, you're going to be a different color when you leave. But like, we would just trade off. And then I kept doing that until this past, like, I want to say like 3 weeks ago, we just couldn't continue training just because he's moving houses. And there's also some things going on with his family regarding like his parents' health that I was like, I can't ask more of you. I can't do this bartering system anymore. It's mean of me to ask you for more when there's other things on your mind, right? Kind of thing. And even I couldn't work out in the evening anymore. I was like, I refuse to work out in the evening anymore, especially around, you know, the holidays where you're getting all kinds of people. I don't want to come home at midnight and I'm still wired, kind of thing. So I ended up getting a specific powerlifting coach that he referred me to. And then after that, all of the trainers now know who I am. It's like, oh, you're Titus's client. You're the RMT lady. And then they just keep coming to my clinic. And then the second I hear I'm from Good Life, it's like, I know exactly who sent you.
See?
Who you know, man.
Just who you know. And now we're going to see you powerlifting.
Yeah, which it's insane because like, I never imagined I could deadlift 215 pounds. I just pulled that a few days ago.
By the way, Mark, I don't know if, like, do you actually remember? We haven't seen her in person in a few years, but like, you were a very small little person last time I saw you. Yeah. So are you like shredded now? Like, are you crazy strong?
A little.
Amazing.
Like, well, if I don't want to like flash you, like I do have still my gym clothes underneath because I just came back from the gym before this starts. So it's like I probably still have a pump from bench day.
Amazing.
I have gained like 45 pounds of muscle.
Nice.
Way wow. Better mental health space. Also the help of having a therapist as well. And I wanted one even through COVID and stuff because I want a non-biased person to talk to. So that was also another thing in my toolkit. But yeah, like I'm able to like push numbers I never thought. I'm also not allowed to look at the numbers. So what my trainer does now, his name is Dylan, my new trainer. He's like, go to your corner. Don't look at it because you're going to psych yourself out. So I get put in timeout. They cover the numbers on the plates and I just pull it and hope for the best that it just flies at this point.
That's awesome.
Wow. Did you say you're deadlifting 215 pounds or was that Yeah.
215 pounds Olympic bar. So like, I don't know how much that is on the other plates because the Olympic bar alone is 45. Yeah. Unless if you're using a trap bar, the one that's like the hexagon where you step in.
Yeah.
Because that was like my training wheels to learn how to properly hinge because I never weight trained before. Like when I played soccer, all they did was make us run and do agility stuff.
Right.
We never picked up weights, which now looking at it, especially the rates of ACL tears in teenage girls and our Q angles, I'm like, why weren't we doing this? Whatever, it is what it is. But I wanted to specifically get a trainer because I didn't trust myself to watch a YouTube video and then I'm like, oh, let's hope I got this and don't break my back because like I need my body for my job. So yeah, I was able to do that just this past week. And then like my bench and squat, we're working on it. I just learned I am a narrow squatter because I got insanely long legs. So that's been fun to deal with. And also playing around with equipment too, because when you do powerlifting competitions, you can also, you use things like belts, straps, lifts in your shoes. There's also learning the commands when you do a competition, because a judge tells you when to lift. It's not like, oh, I just pick it up and put it down. It's like, they tell you when. There's also, they check to make sure you're hitting depth kind of thing. So there's a lot of technicalities, but I'm just learning as I go.
Wow.
I dig it, man. I dig it. Can I ask you a question about the MCQ gig that you had? And yeah. I know you probably can't talk about that very much, but can you just give me a lowdown on what that was that you were doing with the MCQ?
So the MCQ, so at this point, I guess Prometric had just stepped in.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were using another company, I guess, before. So what they were doing it was like the question bank, and like this is known information. This is not like, oh, the CMT is going to come and find me if I talk about this.
Yep.
They were asking RMTs to make questions for the exam. So I guess like what, the 12 or 22 questions that don't count to your score. Mm-hmm. It was more like, I guess, those kinds of things.
Gotcha.
So at this point, you just made a bunch of them. And then you would just submit them and I guess they just filter them out. But right. They were just having a call out for massage therapists like, hey, we need questions based on certain subjects.
Yep.
Would you mind to contribute?
That typically is like something that goes out to all of the registrants.
All
the colleges do that because I get a lot of that from the college of kin too.
The only thing they just say that like obviously I can talk about, it's like, oh, what was your question?
Right.
Or like, how does it work? Like when you're in the Zoom meetings, they tell you about the interworkings of the MCQ. But other than that, like it's more just, oh, you're just contributing. It's not like I'm doing anything really major with the exam.
Right. Don't you do something in student clinic too as well?
Yeah. Another thing, I just finished my first semester being a clinic supervisor at my school. And that was one where my teachers actually reached out to me. So what the situation was, they needed a clinic supervisor for the fall semester. So I was asked by one of our outreach coordinators if I was interested. And the first thing I asked, like, please tell me it's paid. Because if I'm getting paid in experience, I'm like, I'm not a student anymore. Like, I got bills to pay, please. and they said, you're more than welcome to try it out for a semester. Would you like to do it? And I said, sure. So they put me in, the student clinic's actually inside of like a retirement home. It's not on campus because the way that this was kind of a loophole with COVID when students couldn't do a lot of stuff on campus. The loophole was that if it's off-site and technically in a, I guess like a, I don't know what you would, I'm losing my train of thought now. I guess in a service that's still considered essential, you right. can still work. So the loophole was that, oh, nursing and retirement homes are open. This is still considered healthcare.
Mm.
We can put them in instead of when I was in school, our student clinic would be on campus. And then when you're in fifth and sixth semester, they would move you to this specific location because they had more intricate cases because you were dealing with more of the clientele that resided in the retirement home.
So how do you like being a supervisor?
It's a power trip. I am not going to lie. It was a power trip. I don't know if you had seen on Instagram, but by the end, I got them like bowing down to me and like having like a throne where they're like massaging my feet and I have them as like a step stool. I'm like, yes, bow down to me, you peasants. but it was fun because it made me more appreciative of the behind the scenes stuff. Now, I will admit this, though. I don't know what it's like for community colleges versus private career colleges. I did this at a community college. But what I did realize, though, the teachers don't have necessarily as much control as you think. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of the boss of the boss, the teachers union kind of thing. And sometimes it could be a downer on the program itself.
Yeah. We did learn that. We had a couple of episodes not too distant past.
Early fall.
With, you know, someone who was clinic supervising, and just about the politics and the red tape. And, you know, ultimately she ended up losing her position. Then we had someone else come on to talk about like all the interworkings, and there, you know, when it comes to dealing with unions and administrative and instructors, you're absolutely right. The people that are actually on the ground and delivering the material, the instructors, have not that much power. And it's part of the reason a lot of instructors eventually get out of it, because they just want to teach the way they want to teach.
It's a little different, I think, at a private career college. A lot of the private career colleges, you've got a lot of wiggle room with what you're going
to do. There's a little more
provided
flexibility.
Your education coordinator, whatever their title is okay with what you're mm-hmm. doing. And normally a private career college is really open to a lot of ideas that come by, as long as your education coordinator isn't power tripping.
Yeah, I was going to say, again, it still depends on the administration, right? Because ultimately, well, everything has to be run through the administration. Even right. if there is no union, even if you're talking about a private college, the administration and the instructors can butt heads.
Yeah, but I feel like at a private college, if you're coming up with a really solid idea and you've displayed that you can execute on that, and it's to a benefit to everybody, I don't really see them being like, no, unless that person in that power position is power tripping, then it's like, whoa, you can't do that.
Yeah, but for the most part. I would say in my situation was as bad. Funny enough, so when you mentioned that episode, I was aware of it because I listened to it about a week before, so I had heard the controversy. Mm-hmm. So then I realized, shit, did I sign up for something that like I maybe put in a corner, or like am I gonna regret this right. a little bit? Because then I heard you had the podcast episode after where it was someone else, I forget who his name was, talking about Marvin. The administrative part as well. Mm-hmm. Because people at that school were aware of the podcast, because what ended up happening, this was like my second day in student clinic. And I'll totally talk about this experience. There was another colleague of mine who mentioned your podcast. And it's like, oh, did you hear about like, you know, Two Armed Teas and a Mic? They had this podcast about like the student clinics and like the discrepancy. And I'm just like, oh, if only you knew like how much I'm involved. And I'm just like, uh-huh. Like that's all I said. I didn't mention like I was on a podcast or anything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I already had an incident where I had to intervene. I thought, I think I just taught somebody, but I don't give a fuck if they fire me at this point, because I had an incident where there was a student, because I got the semester threes. So this was their first time in student clinic. And I will say this is more of critique of the way it's run now. And there are some changes that need to happen. The student's knowledge for assessments or basic stuff is down here. The expectations of clientele is up here. Like it's like they're still just learning how to do range of motion. They don't know any special tests. They don't know as much orthopedic assessment, or the REMEX is not there.
Right.
So when you have some of these clients that come in and they expect the most of these students, and especially when they're semester three, and my entire intake was semester three, there was no mixed students before. It used to be, you would have some five and six. So if you had more complicated clients or harder cases, you'd give it to them.
Mm-hmm.
So like this was like day two of student clinic. I had someone who got frozen shoulder, semester three sees like all the drugs crossed out on like the health history, all these aches and pains, all these other things going on. They look at me like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And even this person also had a walking aid. So at this point, they need help getting onto the table. I interjected and helped. This colleague even had told me, you're not supposed to do that.
Mm.
And I'm like thinking to myself, actually, I should, because there's going to be an accident that may happen if I don't intervene, especially if this is a client who's way bigger than the student.
Right.
Can't really move them, and even does not have the confidence. So even when they're washing their hands, I said, okay, I know this is technically a teaching moment, but it's like, this is how you can pillow them on the table. This is some structures you can work on. I'm not telling you do X, Y, Z, But it's like, I have to give you something because at this point you're throwing them to the dogs. They literally know nothing.
Yeah.
I even had another student who had someone with severe cerebral palsy. They haven't learned that yet. That's like semester five when you start to get into all the neuro stuff. So they just look at me like a deer in headlights, like, I don't know what to do. Please help me come into the room and assist. And I'm just like, I'll do the best I can. But then I'm treading this very hard line where you kind of end up doing a little bit of it, even though you don't intend to, because at this point it's now a safety issue. And also at the end of the day, this is my license. They're under my supervision.
Yep.
Well, and that's what I had said on those episodes too, where I'm like, I mean, I guess because I've never had to work in a scenario where there was so much red tape and where I was being, you know, micromanaged in any kind of way. But I'm like, when it comes down to it, if you're there to be the clinic supervisor, you're not just a body. Like if you see things and you know that you can help in some way, like I feel like there's some instances in, you know, in Mel's case where if it's a safety issue, I mean, you might have to throw the rules out the window. What's more important right now, the rules or this person with the walking aid who might fall off the table? Like, I would have jumped in just as you did.
Yeah, because they had like a walker. So it's like, okay, I had to show the student, this is how you park a walker. This is how you're going to sit at the side so when they get up, they can still reach it. Or like, you know, you are telling them, like, you are allowed to help your client also get up off the table. This is how you can also do it safely because you have like the pedals for the tables. This isn't like out of scope stuff. This is just common sense stuff.
Yeah.
So we don't have people coming to the school and be like, well, the clinic supervisor didn't intervene. Cause I had also heard from students, cause there was a bunch of other stuff going on, that there were some staff members that like, they'll maybe check once, like to see how they're doing, but that's it. And I was just like, so what are you doing within the time that you're here?
Right.
Kind of thing. Like, it makes me a little bit concerned. Cause they're like, oh, someone else has not said this to me before. You know, you're very open to talk to you about these things. It's like, if you're a clinic supervisor, understand students are going to ask you questions. And sometimes there were shifts that like, I felt like I was doing every job because you still have to be an admin person and, you know, cash clients out. You still have to help with linens and keep the place clean. You're asking students questions. And like, at the end of the day, sometimes you forget to eat a little bit because you're doing so many things.
Mm-hmm. You've brought that up more than once, Mel. Do you have a problem with remembering to eat during the day?
Yeah, that's another thing we're working on, not overbooking myself.
You're learning on the job. It's all good.
Yes, exactly. Learning on the job. But it was one of those things that I did mention to one of the professors who was showing me like this new program that we were having for the computer and just kind of shadowing me. She was more than welcome to take my opinions. Like, you know, what are some things you've noticed in student clinic? And I said, to be honest, a clinic supervisor also needs help because what we used to have before at the school, there would be another massage student who'd work front desk and they'd get paid to do that. And I forget what they were called. It wasn't like a team lead or something, but there was a specific name for it. But you would basically be like an admin. And then the clinic supervisor can actually tend to students.
Right.
When I went, that was not there. So there's times I'm just running around constantly. It's like, okay, I got to go check the rooms. I got to go do linens. And then answer to all the emails that just never go away from your inbox. So it's like, how do you expect this job to also be a job that people will stick with when, one, there's a lot of asked of you to do. And also, and this is not a surprise, techs and clinic supervisors don't get paid a good wage.
Yep.
Because it's like, why on earth would I sacrifice a day of clients for working as a clinic supervisor and I'm getting paid a fraction of what I would do in treating?
Exactly. It's almost like you're doing the saint's work on that.
Pretty much. And it's like, I also don't want to end up being that person that it's like, when I know how much I'm getting paid and how much I have to do, and then I don't want to be like hard about it, or not hard, but I would say bitter going to work. It's like,
yeah,
this is not worth the pay. Like, I still enjoy the job. I loved it. The students that I had were fantastic. There were some that even reminded me of some of my classmates and myself when I was in school. And I was like, oh my God, I used to think this was like the biggest issue or my biggest worry in the world. And now I'm like, you'll be fine. You'll get there. But there was a lot of the political stuff. When you hear about it, it does put a bit of a damper to it.
Mm-hmm. That's one position, though, I think where you can make the biggest impact. When I look back at my massage school career, like the my clinic supervisors are the ones that had the largest impact.
Yeah.
Compared to like my instructors. 100%.
I definitely learned. Yeah. I learned a lot in clinic. And I think over the time I was a student, I had 3 different clinic supervisors. And it really made a difference when I had one who like really, really cared and was really invested and wanted to make sure that we were getting the most out of it. And, you know, went out of her way to set up like really cool outreaches and make sure that we were really learning while we were there, and made a really big difference.
Yeah, 100%. I can think back to massage school, and that was a long time ago. I have very vivid memories of student clinic and who taught me what, whether it was Phil or Alfie or Dennis or Terry Lynn. Like, I fucking even know their names still. Do you know what I mean?
I know their names.
they had a large impact at the time compared to what was happening in treatments class or orthopedic assessments class or whatever.
Totes, man. Totes. I'm so happy that we're getting to kick off season 7 with a repeat guest. But also, like I said, my hope today, and you really like, you went above those expectations, Mel. My hope today was to like hear a story of somebody who's really exploring the world of massage. Because, you know, we always talk about how there's so many cool things you can do and you're so new in it and you're just trying out different things and, you know, being open to possibilities and taking on opportunities that maybe aren't going to be, you know, part of your career trajectory, but they'll either be a cool story, a learning experience, a network opportunity. Like there's just a lot of cool things you're doing. And it all started with saying yes and listening to Mark, apparently.
I will say, though, this is a disclaimer. They're saying yes, but then they're saying yes with boundaries.
Yes.
Because those are completely different things. Yes, I said yes to these opportunities and stuff like that, but especially now, I don't know what happened when I hit 25. I learned a lot more about, like, you know, who has your best interest at heart, who are people you actually want to keep in your life, in your VIP circle, I guess I call it, and also learning how to put yourself first. Because before, I would say I was a very passive person, because I would say yes, but then there's times that I wish I didn't, because then I've overbooked myself. Mm-hmm. I'm exhausted. I'm probably dreading it later. And also to sometimes avoid confrontation. So I say yes to things that I resonate with, but I won't say yes for the sake of like, this is going to make someone else feel better.
Yeah.
Or also, like, this is going to stop someone from feeling uncomfortable. But then I'm doing the gymnastics and stuff to always compromise my needs and stuff like that for other people.
Yeah. And but you learned that lesson, right? And that's the thing, is you learned that because you had made a joke about this, the clinic supervision being a paid position. You know when money matters. You know when, you know, I'm being taken advantage of. But that comes with life experience.
What happened at 25 that this is the new vision?
I think a lot of it just had to do with stuff that was going on in my life. So between 2021 and 2022, and a lot of people experience this in life, but I was experiencing this for the first time, realizing who my real friends were, who really has my back, because there was other things in my life that were happening where, you know, it was almost a reality check that I really questioned who my friends were. Were we just friends because of proximity? Like some of my friends I had for years, like decades, like from elementary and high school, mm-hmm. to other friends I've met later on in life, but we're also so different. And I think a lot of it also had to do with me putting in so much time and energy to relationships that had an expiry date, and realizing I can't force people to be in my life. Because at the end of the day, you're just going to be extremely emotionally depleted. So I had a lot of people between 2021 and 2022, both physically, like, yes, I've had people who have passed away, but I've also had people where there's many friendships that I've had for years that have ended, but I realized history doesn't mean anything if it's always constantly a one-sided relationship. And also understanding who's there when you really need it. Because there was times where I've had friends where I'm always there to help you, I'm there for your highs, your lows, to sit in the mud, to be your biggest cheerleader, but when it's my turn, you're not there. And then that just hurts. And I realize I really don't have as much of a stable support system as I think I do.
Is that a happy moment? I know happy is the wrong word. Mm-hmm. But this, the discovery of, I really understand what's going on here, but then also the sadness that comes with the expiration date. How does that, how do you navigate that?
I navigate it, I guess, just a day at a time, because there was friendships I really grieved. I won't go into too many details, but in 2022, I lost a very dear friend of mine who I thought was a forever. And it felt as painful as a breakup of a romantic relationship. Mm-hmm. Because this was someone I truly loved, and I still do, and I don't want to talk badly about this person and without giving too many details, but it hurt to grieve a friendship where we've seen each other through so much of life that we're at this point where you may not be in my life anymore, and it hurts to think of my life without them. Mm. And I also think of it in the way it's like, I just want them to be happy, even if it means I'm not there. So that kind of gives me that kind of acceptance. But it's very hard because you do grieve it. It's like a death, essentially. So there was many people coming in and out of my life. And I understand this is just the growing pains of being in your 20s. I also gave myself the space to accept that this is hard, this is sad kind of thing. That's something I didn't do before. If something negatively happened in my life, I used to what I call shelf it, that I feel guilty of being sad, that there's always someone worse, that is, someone worse is going through something harder than I am, that I should not complain, or I feel like I'm complaining, but I give myself now the space to grieve things that have ended or things that are hard. I hope that answers your question. I think I kind of trailed off a little bit.
No, it makes a lot of sense. I'm a little different when it comes to that stuff. I bring people in really fast, but I can also cut you out just as fast as I brought you in. And that doesn't have any reflection on the relationship or how I felt about the relationship or how I do feel about the relationship, but I will cut you out just as fast as I brought you in. I'll give you an example. We had a massage therapist friend who wasn't always stable, always something going on. Both of us were very, very helpful to this person.
Yeah.
And we took this person in. And then one day this person, this person slept on our couch. Do you know
what
I mean?
She met my parents.
Many, many times. Do you know what I mean? I got this person a job. Anyway, and then one day this person comes to me and says, I don't think we could be friends anymore. I said, oh, okay. Why do you say so? Well, because I feel like I'm not getting out of this relationship what I'm putting into it. And I was like, excuse me? She's like, I feel like you're reaping all the benefits of this friendship. And I was like, wait just a goddamn second. If you think I'm getting anything out of this, you're completely mistaken. Whatever you think I'm getting out of this, guess what? I don't need it. I don't want it. And that was that. And like I said, I'll cut you out just as fast as I'll bring you in. Because I brought that person in pretty quick. And I had known that person from massage school. Like, that's how long ago this was. And then one day this happened. And I was like, I'm done with that. That's it. And I didn't grieve it, though. I didn't even think twice about it.
But I wonder if she did. And I understand what Mel is saying. And, you know, we talked about this before, actually, on an episode that I'm not sure has gone yet. Has Elle's episode dropped yet?
I don't remember.
Okay. Anyway, we talked about this with a business coach, Elle Browning, and we were talking about how in life sometimes you have to make decisions. You know, some things have to end.
Yep.
And even though you know it's the right decision and ultimately it's the best for everybody, there is still a period of grieving because something is ending. And there was probably good things that came out of it, whether it was lessons or there were good times or memories or whatever.
I don't regret my friendship with that person at all.
And so we were talking about how, you know, I will be the person to grieve something, you know, like as you're describing, Mel, even though this person maybe wasn't, you know, ultimately is not somebody that is good for you in your life anymore or where you're going. Maybe, you know, it was the right thing to end the friendship. You're still going to grieve it because it did exist. And we discovered that Mark, like, makes decisions pre-grieves them, and then when it's over, it's over. There's no grievance afterward.
Yeah, he's a very straight to the point guy from what I've learned from you guys.
I'm like a droid, though. I also don't really eat and I don't really sleep. So you know what I mean?
Very true.
Yeah, Mark's just unique. Like, one of them in particular was like a group of friends I've known since I was in elementary school, and there was a few events I could tell that there was already telltale signs that this friendship was starting to have an expiry date, especially when I went to massage school. Like, they did not understand how a fast track program works, for example, right? Or that I can't hang out with you all the time because we do have jobs. Some of us are in different cities and stuff like that. And that's just a part of life. It doesn't mean I don't love you or I don't care about you. Mm-hmm. And there also came times where there was important events in my life where they did not show up for, but I'm always there for you guys.
Right.
And it's like, I'm asking you bare minimum. I'm not like, I shouldn't have to beg on my knees for you to be there for special events in my life. That's just bare minimum stuff in a friendship. And it's like, it kind of hurt because it's like, I'm there for everybody else. And I will love and support you for everything. But it's like, you know, the healer needs to be healed. The listener needs to be listened to. It's like, it has to be reciprocal to a degree. And I think where I was going, especially considering I was the first of my original group of friends to graduate from a post-secondary program, it was very different when they were also doing university and stuff like that. They're like, why can't Mel hang out with us all the time? It's like, well, I don't have from May to September off for a summer. I still plow through school, right? Mm-hmm. We're also in different cities. So like, yeah, there is more effort to try to hang out and stuff, but it's like, there's also that part of growing up that like, when you're a teenager, you're not all confined in the same place anymore, right? So when you're like in high school, elementary school, whatever, there's the proximity. You're in the same town, same school. You see each other every day. Yep. When you guys start to grow up and other things get in the way, or I shouldn't say get in the way, but it just happens. Like, some of us like, you know, have boyfriends and girlfriends, maybe get married, move away or whatever. There still has to be effort to be put into a relationship. And I realized, I was like, I'm getting breadcrumbs. And then that's when those relationships ended, and I grieved them. But at the same time, it was one of those things that I said to myself, I deserve better.
Yep. You're better for it.
Yeah.
Totally get it. I have friends that are of convenience, right? There are people that I grew up with that we have nothing in common anymore. We probably have nothing to say to each other anymore, but we're still friends because it was convenient, and it still kind of is. And it's one of those people you see every once in a while and you just accept it for that, what it is. But then I also have a whole bunch of people that I've grown up with that we don't see each other at all. We see each other very rarely, and I still consider them to be like some of my best friends because those are the fucking people that I know if I call them up right now, they will drop everything and be here for me, and vice versa.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't need to see you or talk to you all the time for that to stay in existence.
Yeah. Which is exactly what Mel's describing. Yeah. You grow up, life happens. Yeah. I don't hang out with my friends all the time anymore. You know, I'm of the, population where like the memes where it's like growing up is texting your friend every few days saying like, hey, we should meet up for coffee, and never actually doing it until infinity. Like that's but if I really do need her, or vice versa, or you know, if we need to talk, we know we can call each other, kind of thing. So still good friends.
Those are some of my best moments, though. I've got a buddy I've known since I was 4 years old. I'm fucking 48 now. I've known him for 44 years, and it's like all we do is like, hey, call him up. Hey man, what are you doing? Nothing, just hanging out. But cool. If you want to do something later, give me a call. Okay, cool. We know we're not going to give each other a call to do anything later.
Never.
But that's just the typical guy reach out. Okay, we're still there. We're still cool. I love it. I love it.
Well, we should schedule our next update with Mel. You know, same time, same place, like next year, and see where you're at and what's going on. I definitely want to see like pictures or video of this powerlifting competition that's happening in the spring. And hopefully we'll see you out at some events since you're so entrenched in the massage world now. Canadian Massage Conference is going to be in Calgary. You can come hang out with us in Calgary. Then we'll be back here in Ontario. If you don't want to go to Calgary, that's fine. But yeah, I mean, we got to keep you as a regular now and keep doing updates and seeing where you're going with your massage career and or your athletic career and or whatever else you decide to do.
Man, I want to get you in to do a talk when we do our massage conference in October. It used to be a free day for like students and stuff.
That's free for the world.
Now it's free for absolutely everybody, but it's got a shit ton of students that come out. And I think everything you have to say would be super fucking interesting and inspirational to a group of students.
Yeah.
I want to get you in on that in October.
I would be more than honored to do that. Like, that's even something. I have like a little bucket list of things I want to do. Like, this sounds like so cheesy, but I have like some bucket list things I want to do as a massage therapist. So one of them, I said, give back to my program, which I was able to do. I was able to be a TA. And I also want to have a disclaimer too. I love the job. Any of the critiques that I give is just my experience, and it's probably different for other people. And there's always room for growth. And I understand there's other elements to it, but I was very honored and happy that even my professors brought up my name in some meeting somewhere, say, let's get Mel to be a TA. So I'm honored, and I would wholeheartedly do it again. I don't know, based on my schedule, because I, at the time of this recording, I haven't heard much from the school. And based on my schedule, I don't know if I'll be able to commit like to doing TAing again, but we'll kind of see what happens. But it's one of them. I will always have love and respect for like my massage program. And I know they're listening, and I wouldn't be the RMT I am without them, because they taught me everything I know. It's one of those things that like, I have that giving back to my school, be a part of a conference to some degree. Another one was volunteer or work for the CMTO, did that, be with a sports team, did that. I would say the next one on the list probably is maybe be like you said, a public speaker or something like that, just to kind of still be in touch with the profession to some degree. So yeah, you're checking off another bucket list.
Yay.
For me.
I love that. And it just reminded me of the very first time you appeared on the podcast, because it was you that reached out, although you didn't come on alone. You were the one that reached out. And when you and I set this up, I know we told the story first, but I don't know if you remember this, Mark, it was the cutest thing. So I had said to her like, yeah, let's do this. And then she thought that she had left the chat with me, and she was talking to her other friend that she was going to come on with. And she's like, hey, guess what your girl did? I'm like, nope, still me.
Yep, I remember that. That was one of my airhead moments. That's just one of many in my blooper reel.
But it was so good, because I was like, man, they're like really excited to be on the podcast. So that was really fun. And we had such a good time that first time you guys came in. So the next time, hopefully we can do it in person. I know you're, acting as caregiver right now at home again, so you couldn't come in. But next time, person. We're going to do it up and get an update of what you're doing with your life.
Hell yeah, I'll bring snacks.
I love snacks.
Right on. This is fun. Thanks for doing this. This is good.
No problem. It's always a pleasure talking to you guys. And also thank you as well for teaching me all your other skills as well, because I'm also very appreciative of everything that you guys have done for the profession, myself. And I'm just grateful to be working with you guys at all. Because like, you guys are like, as cheesy as it is, role models to me. Like, I hope I can be able to have a fraction of the brains that you two have.
It's not that hard.
Yeah. It's already there. Well beyond. Right on. This has been good. You guys have been listening to Two Massage Therapists in a Microphone. Peace.